There are many outfits who offer paragliding guiding in different parts of the world. The services these companies or individuals offer can range from just driving you up the local hill, or UK instructors taking groups abroad, guiding with accommodation, fly guiding, or XC courses, where the guide's with you in the air and teaching you about flying whilst you're experiencing the flight. But how do you choose where to go and with whom? And what can you expect when you get there? And how can you make the most out of your precious paragliding holiday week? For this podcast, I've spoken to three established and experienced guides: Toby Colombe from Passion Paragliding, who guides in Morocco, Slovenia, Annecy and Azure; Adam Hill from Frontiers Paragliding, who runs a guiding business and school in Nepal and Bhutan; and Kelly Farina from Austrian Arena, who is based in Meierhofen in the Zillertal. All three offer fly guiding. They're passionate about their chosen flying areas and want to ensure not only that clients have a good time, but come away from their holiday having improved as pilots. Firstly, I asked them about the types of guiding that are generally offered and what kind of type of operation they run. Here's Adam describing what he does.
I mean, fly guiding is what it's all about. We're based in Nepal, and obviously our main aim is to get people to, you know, introduce people to the skies of Nepal. But that involves a lot more. It's not just taking someone around on a cross-country flight. It's all about introducing them to the country, the culture. You know, we're pretty hands-on. We do the whole range of it. We pick them up from the airport, get them accommodation, take them out to villages, show them a bit of the culture. You know, it's guiding in a very broad, big sense, not just flying, but, you know, we sort of take them around the country, see a bit of the culture.
Here's Toby offering his view.
Taking, for example, a pilot of, say, 50 hours or even a pilot of 10 hours just so post-CP, perhaps they're going on holiday with their paraglider for the first time. What have they got to go on? Not a lot, other than word of mouth, reputation, a website perhaps. But guiding can take many forms, I suppose. Do they have a first aid certificate? Do they know where the nearest hospital is? Because you do occasionally have guides operating in new locations who really don't have a clue, might not speak the local language, and don't actually fly with you. Do they fly with you? Do they even know how to fly? There's so much, there's such a range of guiding out there. And perhaps there's room for it all. You know, perhaps all you want as a 200-hour pilot who's already experienced the Alps is when you go to this new set of Alps is someone just to show you where it is and spend perhaps a couple of hours with you explaining how the aerology works locally and which farmers' fields to avoid. But then perhaps you want something much more where you're going to get some coaching and you're going to be retrieved. There's such a range, I suppose, of what guiding could involve.
And according to Toby, the perfect guide also has the following skills.
They need to know the local terrain, by which I mean they need to know the local weather, what's going on, local site rules, all the stuff that you're not going to know on your first visit, but fairly simple stuff, and also stuff that from experience, if they have experience, that's what they need, really, at least a minimum of experience of where they're flying. And if they don't, they should be open about that with clients and say, look, I haven't flown here more than a handful of times. And most of the places I guide, I've flown at a lot, so it's, particularly in Morocco, I've probably got more experience than just about anybody, certainly English-speaking, a lot more experience of what the weather does and odd things that can happen. So it's informing clients of that kind of stuff. It's being informative. But then on the tricky side I was going to come to is really, it's the psychological side. It's sussing out, where's this pilot coming from? And that's something that can take a day or two. So it's a fantastic privilege to be with someone for a week in what can be one of the best weeks of their year. But try and suss out, where are they coming from? Is this pilot overconfident or underconfident? And usually girls tend to be much more capable than they realise. And the boys, it's the other way around. Not always, but it's that kind of stuff. Are they going to do something crazy? Do I need to rein them in a bit? Or do they just need some encouragement? So it's all, that's the softer skills, isn't it? If I look back to instructors who are particularly good, they seem to have an ability to suss out an individual. And I might be a better guide for some people than others, and other people might, you know, vice versa, depending on what kind of character they are. Some people need kicking off the hill and other people need holding back. So that, I'd say, is probably the biggest skill that you can have as a guide. Thereafter, I suppose, you know, perfect guide would speak the local language fluently, because that could help. But it might not be the most important thing if they've got experience there. Perhaps it's a country where there are plenty of English speakers, but certainly knowledge of the environment, really. And really, I think most people, when they come away with me, they're looking to get as much airtime as possible. So the more experience I have of a location, the more likely that is to happen, because I know that in a west wind, we go there, or when it's over that strength, then we go here in the morning, but by 1 o'clock we need to land, and so on. So it's local knowledge is absolutely key. If you want to go on as a higher level guide need to have, then they certainly need to be a very good pilot. But more than that, probably more important than being a very good pilot is an ability to teach, an ability to analyse perhaps somebody's flying and give them feedback. I guess you need to be observant and work out where it is that this pilot can improve. It depends on the type of guiding, you know. I mean, in Morocco, for example, I'm as much a guide to the country as I am to the flying, because it's a pretty, as flying destinations go, it's pretty out there, it's pretty remote, it's pretty exciting, adventurous culture with lots of strange people from an English person's point of view, so I'm as much a guide to the country there. But if I'm guiding, so I do an alpine adventure trip, and I'm guiding XC through the mountains, so perhaps on an XC day, the skill will be in knowing where my 6 or 7 clients are in the air, trying to keep them together if it's that kind of day, and if it's possible, making sure that my retrieve driver knows where they are on the ground. It's a huge plethora of skills, really. I go for the top end in terms of service, or at least I try to, air-to-air radio guiding, where I'm in the air with the clients, and really, more and more, trying to help people improve their flying skills. My big passion is in keeping them safer. A lot of guides won't do that, and as I say, there's room for that, but as long as clients know, and I think sometimes clients, people don't always realise what they want or what they need, do they?
No.
That's the conundrum, really. People quite often come away from trips of mine and say, I didn't realise you're going to do all that and give us all this, that and the other. So it's nice to be able to kind of outperform their expectations.
This is Kelly offering his views.
Okay, well, they obviously need to have a very good understanding of the weather and the lie of the land in the areas that they're guiding. Ideally, it would be good if they lived there, so they see it from all the different shades of the year and all the different varied conditions, and not just been there for a short time, maybe. Particular skills, patience, and also experienced pilots. It's quite difficult sometimes to see what people are struggling on, because it just seems so natural to when you've been doing it so long. So it's almost good to be able to take a step back.
Adam Hill.
Firstly, I think you need to be on top of your skills. You need to be a very good pilot to start with. That's important. It sounds obvious, but you'd be amazed at how many people I see come out in a pool. You know, a lot of foreign schools bring over groups, and their guide or instructor really hasn't got a handle on the basic skills. So you need to be a good pilot, first and foremost. Secondly, you need to know the area intimately. Again, it sounds obvious, but you really need to know what you're about. You need to know climate. You need to know the terrain. You need to know the infrastructure. You know, if something does happen, something goes wrong, you need to know how to deal with it. You also need to know how to make the most out of a not a very good day. And I think that's the essence of guiding, is to try and get the most out of any given day so that your clients see what's happening. For me, that's a real pleasure when there's a day that's not looking great and you work hard and they have a great flight. They sit down at the bar at the end of the day and they say, geez, I didn't think we were even going to fly today, let alone fly 30Ks. And you think, yeah, great, you know, job well done. So, you know, to summarise, you need to be a good pilot, you need to know your area intimately, and you also need to be open to not just the flying side of things. That's what I like about Nepal, is if we're not flying, I love showing people around the country, showing them what this country's about. It's, you know, it's pretty easy, actually. It sells itself.
So, what should people look out for and expect?
Whenever I fly in a new place, I have no qualms about asking anybody, you know, on takeoff about the local conditions, the site, where I should and shouldn't fly. For me, it's a no-brainer. Whenever you go to a new place, you always want to get local information, regardless of who you are, how long you've been flying. It just makes sense. So if I was going on a trip, I would first of all, and I was going to be in a guided trip, I'd want to speak to the person first, get an idea of what they're about and what sort of service they offer, because for sure there's a huge range of services offered there, from just the guys who offer transport and a bus and a place to stay, to the guys who, and I count myself in this, offer the full hands-on experience, non-stop guiding, you know, taking them around, showing them the whole country. So I'd want to speak to the person, see what they're like, see what they offer, and get that clear, get that very clear, because there's nothing worse than having misconceptions. You come out, and what you consider to be on offer is something that's totally different. So I'd want to get that clear. Whether you speak to the guy or you see in their terms and conditions, it is important. Try and make it clear from the outset what it is the guide offers. And generally in most countries, there are various businesses offering different levels. So you can always shop around. It makes sense to do that. But I'd certainly want to know that if there was a non-flying day, for example, what are the other activities to do? Because it's a long way to come. Regardless, even if you go to the French Alps and you don't want to be sat in the rain, you want to know there's other things to do. Now, I wouldn't expect my guide to take me go-karting, but I would expect him to point me in the right direction. I would certainly want to know about the medical facilities, the emergency systems he's got in place. That's just common sense. Just because you're paying somebody to guide you around doesn't mean you need to switch off all common sense. You know, you're still a pilot, you're still in charge of your own decisions. And that decision starts from, you know, which country you're choosing to fly in, who you're going to choose to guide you. It's remarkable how many people, just because they're paying you money, want to switch off all decision-making processes themselves. You know, you wouldn't do that generally if you were going out flying at your local cross-country site. You'd still be making independent decisions. And I try and tell that to all my clients. You know, you're still here. You're still making decisions yourselves. I'm going to be guiding you as you know, as much as I can. But don't blindly just fly and put yourself in a stupid situation. Still use your own decision-making process. You know, it is interesting how many folk you see doing that. You know, oh, I'm being guided. I'll switch off. Don't do that.
Here's Toby again.
The perfect client would certainly be asking lots of questions. I try to have something a guide should have is being very open to questions, for example. And no questions are stupid, at least initially. To encourage questions is something a guide should be doing. And it's just quite frequent that although you give people the opportunity to ask questions. I mean, I suppose I've been on the other side, so I suppose people feel, particularly if it's day one and they're surrounded by other people that they might not necessarily know, they might feel quite nervous about asking questions. But certainly people who can ask questions. It's very difficult to be honest about your ability, but a perfect client would also be very honest about their ability, but you never really know their ability until you've seen them fly for the first time, or perhaps two or three flights. They'd listen to what you've got to say, and most of my clients are very good at that, actually. I try not to keep them too long, but if the first day, for example, on a guided week, for example, the first briefing can be the longest briefing. So I try to make it slightly interesting. You sometimes find that people didn't listen, but it's really because, you know, they've had so much information to take in. They've just got up earlier. They've been up since 3 o'clock and they've caught a flight across several countries, 3 hours, what have you, and arrived in a hot country and everything's new. So it is difficult for them to listen. They would certainly, I think, you know, from my point of view, and I realise this is actually unrealistic, but if they're a good pilot, if they can launch well, if they can ground handle well, if they can look after themselves, then that's a dream come true for any guide, because it just makes you a lot less nervous. It means that you've got someone that you're pretty happy can look after themselves, and they're looking to improve, and perhaps they want to go XC and increase their distances. Perhaps they've done some already, but yeah, that's fantastic when I get clients who can really look after themselves. But it's not all of the time. The reality of the club pilot qualification is that you aren't at that level. You are at the level that you should be flying in a club environment with some kind of supervision. And that varies from person to person. People learn at different rates, obviously, but usually it takes people 100 hours, sometimes a lot less, sometimes more. But it usually takes people about 100 hours to get to the point where they're really autonomous, I suppose, in the really broad sense of the term, that they're very good at ground handling and just have an instinct about where not to go, and you're happy that they're not going to land in a tree.
Adam Hill.
They would, first and foremost, be enthusiastic. They need to be enthusiastic and keen and willing to learn and be open-minded about things. And generally, those are the kind of people I get coming out to Nepal. You know, they've made a big decision to come all the way out, And, you know, it's a rare exception when you see someone who's not enthusiastic about it. And it doesn't bother me whether they have previous cross-country experience or the last XC was 100Ks. It doesn't bother me, you know. You can get anyone flying cross-country. It's just a psychological barrier that needs to be broken. So, first and foremost, my ideal client needs to be enthusiastic, keen, willing to learn, and open-minded, you know, all about enjoying the moment, having fun, because that's what we're doing this sport for. We're in it to have fun. So the client who's having the most fun is probably my ideal client. It is easier if the guy can take care of themselves, can make good cross-country decisions. It does make it easier. And when you get a group of guys who are good cross-country pilots, then guiding them is a real pleasure, in that you're just flying cross-country with a bunch of mates rather than, you know, and you're steering them in the right direction rather than... It certainly makes your work easier when you've got a group of clients who are switched on cross-country pilots. But probably no less fun than if I'm guiding a bunch of guys who it's their first time flying, you know, real cross-country in mountains, and then the buzz around the bar at the end of the day is huge. And, you know, when they're recapping their flights and their grand tales of climbing out, and, you know, it's, for me, that's a huge thrill. And your ideal client can be from all levels. The guys having the most fun are the ones I enjoy flying with.
Kelly offers some more advice on specific things that people can do to prepare for their trip abroad and to go on an XC guiding course.
Have your launches absolutely sorted. That's like step number one, so that you're not thinking about the launch. So you can launch that glider in your sleep without even thinking, because then you're looking over your shoulder, you're watching to see if I'm climbing. You're no longer nervous about pulling this bag of nylon and strings up into the air and running off the hill. That's already sorted. You've got that part down. You can just look, see if a bird is climbing or anything, you know, any signs that you have a good chance of staying up. Thermaling in strong conditions, especially if you're going on an XC trip, then, you know, obviously safely, but training in strong conditions helps you stay in the air longer, so you don't get so mentally tired, not just physically tired. But the best training for flying is flying.
So thinking about venues and their reliability, all guides pick up their venues. So what should you be thinking about if you really want to know how much it's actually flyable?
If you put it in one place, there's a huge pressure for you to say that, you know, it's great all year long, or at least that extend the season a little bit too far. And that's what I'm anxious to avoid, because what I've noticed is that although words like XC, you know, that's a magic word that pushes buttons, it's very enticing to British clients in particular. But probably more than that, it depends what they're looking for, really. If they're coming to Morocco, it's because it's... Partly it might be, it depends on the client, but they're coming for some sunshine as well. And the other thing is reliable, you know. So that's quite key to me, is finding sites that are reliable. And if I was to give people advice, it would be to fly in different places, because you'll just learn so much from flying in different sites. So I need to do the same, because I'm trying to set an example. I'm still improving, and I'm very passionate about my own flying still. Which I think the moment that I stop enjoying my own flying, I'll probably stop guiding, because I don't... At the moment, it's very easy for me to be enthusiastic about flying, because I am. Mm. And I want to fly a lot. I want to operate in a reliable venue. I want to be up in the air with my clients and fly. And, you know, that they have limited funds sometimes. They have limited holidays. They're paying me some money to look after them and get them as much airtime as possible. So I almost feel it's my duty to find that reliable venue. I'll even study weather statistics and try and find the right time to be somewhere. But particularly in the last 2 years, it's been difficult for everyone. The rules aren't being followed very much anymore. And if they are, you can still have that freak week. Yeah, you never know what you're going to get, do you? That's the truth.
A final word from Adam Hill.
Somebody who can help a client get the most out of any day in the given location. I think that's what a good guide comes down to. A guy who can get the most out of any day and pass it on to the client. Where others will be struggling or bombing out, a good guide will get his clients up and away on days that others might not be.
I've talked to Kelly, Toby and Adam, but there are obviously many, many good guides out there. It's important to think about what you want out of your holiday. Do you really want coaching, or do you just need a taxi? I think that decision will vary depending on where you are with your flying, where you're going geographically, and what time of year you're going. It also depends a lot on your budget and if you want to go flying with a group of people you know, or you're happy to end up just with a bunch of strangers. Really, I think the key point in this podcast is to do your homework, talk to the person who's going to be guiding you, and think about what you want.